Well, hello there. I'm Chris Angel, and my pronouns are they, them. Welcome to Allyship is a Verb, a podcast for people practicing allyship for the LGBTQ plus community and beyond.
Hi, my name is Sean Dasani. I use he, him, or they, them pronouns.
Born and raised in North Carolina, Sean is a Los Angeles-based actor, producer, writer, and speaker who has written, produced, and directed over 30 short films, commercials, and music videos. What a run-on sentence I've created. Anyway, we met in a library, and I think this sounds like the beginning of a rom-com, and I'm so sorry to spoil it, y'all, but there is no rom-com to be had. I'm disappointed too, but and I can't recall who they came with, probably a friend, but they were both in the audience, and essentially, a librarian had asked me to do this event at her library. He'd found out about it somehow since it was a public event. And we got to talking a bit after. And again, this was ages ago, truly. But it's been really cool to keep tabs on him and see what he's been up to all of these years. We're going to be talking about at least two of their projects, including one called Agents of Change. Also, like most actors, they have clips of various projects they've done, but there's a Google commercial in particular that I think perfectly shows off his charm, so I will be linking to that in the show notes. Please check it out. And now it's time for three self-reflection questions to ponder during our conversation. Be sure to stick around after for three more. Number one, which of my identities do I lead with? Does it change in any situations? Number two, at what age did I first start thinking about my gender? Or gender at all? Number three, has there been a time I forced myself to do something because it felt expected of me? How did I feel about that? Would I do anything differently now? And now, our conversation. You are an uncle, brother, and son. You're of South Asian diaspora. Indian American, you're environmentally conscious, you're health conscious, you're a transgender man. There's a lot going on there. What do those intersections mean to you?
Well, so many things. First of all, thank you for having me on. I was just going to say, I think you do such a great job as a podcast host.
Aww.
When you reached out to me, I listened to some of your previous podcasts. And of course, my good friend Petey Gibson was on earlier this year. And for anyone who's listening now, please listen to Petey's episode with Chris Angel. It's brilliant. You have such a really great natural flow. So I'm excited to be here and chat with you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I did not pay them to say that. So anyone listening, I didn't ask him to do that or anything. So thank you.
That was free. That one was free. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm definitely blushing. Thank you. That means a lot. And yes, I agree. Petey is super smart, said so many wonderful things. So yeah.
Smart, eloquent, handsome. He's a good dude. He's a good dude. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for my intersectional identities, you know, I think when you asked me, I led with family identifications first, uncle, brother, son. I've had a strong sense of family ever since I was a kid. I grew up in an extended family. Up until I was 8 years old, it was my parents, my two sisters, two of my aunts, one of my uncles, my grandparents. We were all in the same house together. My family had immigrated from India and settled in a small town called Fayetteville, North Carolina. And so we always had family around, and that sense of, you know, family has always been something really strong in my life. And of course now, you know, my sisters and I, we're adults and they have kids. And so I have these four nibblings in my life that I get to be an uncle to.
Nibbling, N-I-B-L-I-N-G, is a gender-neutral term to replace nephew and niece. It was coined by linguist Samuel Elmo Martin in 1951, which shocked the hell out of me because I thought it was even newer than that.
I'm the middle child in between my siblings and I, and so I feel like the middle child is always different. I don't know why, we're just different. And somehow, like, it's this feeling of like, am I really an adult? Am I grown up? That I'm always kind of question mark, not sure of. But then when I get a chance to interact with my niblings, especially who are like preteens, early teens and preteens now, there's this sense of elderness, I guess. I don't know what the, you know, maybe like a little bit of a, oh, I know things. I can impart some things to them, you know, that comes out that I feel like very grown in some way.
Yeah.
Health and wellness became a big thing for me as I started medically transitioning. I did a lot of research pre-medical transition, and this was 2012, 2013, as I was kind of exploring what was going to be the right step for me. And one thing that at the time really did scare me was the lack of research that was out there for someone who was going to be, in my case, on testosterone for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that would mean for me and my body. And so I just started, you know, over the years, I just started like changing the way that I ate. I was always vegetarian. My family and I, you know, we were always practicing a lacto-vegetarian diet. Living in California, you know, having access to food that wasn't always fast food. You know, we have really great vegetarian restaurants and everyone's super health conscious here, and, you know, call it the vanity of the entertainment industry or whatever, for better or for worse. I think there's certain things that I learned that I really began to appreciate. But I try to be just a very health conscious person. I drink really yummy green juice in the morning that's just vegetables in the blender.
You are sounding very LA right now.
I can't deny that. Forget about it. I think when I would go back to North Carolina to go visit family, like every trip, my brother-in-law would just like get a little nervous about what new thing I would introduce. Like the year I told them about kale, they had never heard about it. They were like, what is this tough green leafy thing? We don't like it. We don't want it. But now they do eat kale. So I feel very proud of that.
I don't, because like, yeah. I'm like, I got to massage this. Like I want a massage. Why the fuck am I massaging my food? Mm-hmm. You know?
I hear you.
I don't like it on its own, but right. I can like it in like a really well done salad for sure.
You know, it's like that with tofu. I mean, tofu has no taste whatsoever, but yeah. And I've had people say, oh, I can't stand it. But I'm like, I grew up with spices. Like Indian cooking is all about spices, and there's a lot of variety too. And so I use a lot of spices in my cooking, and not necessarily like hot, spicy, but just like different flavors. And I bring those together. And that's something that I really enjoy, like just experimenting in the kitchen. I cannot follow a recipe at all. Like if you put it right in front of me, it feels restrictive for some reason. So I always like, maybe it's that middle child rebellion. I always like go off the cuff and kind of just do my own thing.
Well, I mean, people get lazy with tofu. I mean, I think about how many restaurants I've been to, their tofu dishes are always so boring.
Very boring, yeah.
Y'all really don't know how to work with this. I mean, because there are different ways you have to mess with it, like draining the water, or like, you know, there's certain ways you can pan fry it. So like, if you know how to work with it, tofu doesn't have to be boring. But also like, not everyone's going to want to have like just a tofu dish. Like yeah, they're really limiting their options anytime they have like a, just like a vegetarian part of the menu. It's just like really boring usually, unless it's a place that's like vegan or something, you know, then
right.
No more boring tofu.
No more boring tofu. I know. We should make t-shirts. I love that.
Let's do it. Yeah, sorry, I really derailed us there, but it just felt important to be passionate about that. So kale, passionate, I'm happy that you found your way to kale and that you are inspiring others to give it a shot too.
Yeah, not my only mission, but hey, you know. Mm-hmm. Health, I think for trans folks, you know, good healthcare is not always accessible. And I do feel lucky to be like in a city like Los Angeles where there's the LA LGBT Center, and I know there are a few other clinics that offer healthcare for trans folks that's kind, that's empathetic, that's understanding. You know, we don't always have that. And I think that a lot of times we have to figure things out for ourselves, especially when you're in a smaller town or in a place where there's not a place to go and you're not sure where to go, not just for hormones, but for someone who's going to look at your body holistically mm-hmm. and listen to what you're experiencing and feeling. When I started testosterone, I think within 8 months, I like working out. Okay. But I started to experience this kind of prickly feeling every time I would work out, like pins, you know, on my skin. And through my own research, because I couldn't figure out what was going on, through my own research, what I came to understand was when you start testosterone therapy as a trans man, at least my experience was, the skin gets thicker, the sweat glands get thicker. My body basically wasn't releasing the sweat. So I would be, say, on the treadmill or whatever, you know, and working out, and it's like my sweat was not releasing off my skin, and I'd have to just rub my skin really vigorously in order to let the pores open up and release the sweat. And this was going on for months, and you know, I stopped working out for a little while and all that. But I also understood that testosterone is heating. There's a heat element internally that happens inside. And so it made sense that my body was getting very hot. And so I started learning about Ayurveda, which is like in East Indian science, kind of looks at the body holistically with the foods that are right for you, with the temperature, with the seasons. And so I started making sure I was eating more cooling foods like mint, cucumber, watermelon, things like that, that I would bring into my diet that helped me stay balanced. Again, that was something that I think, like, knowing how many changes my body was going through that I could understand, and things that I wasn't sure about, I had to kind of dig and research. And that's what kind of led me into a health and wellness journey. It's not that I'm certified in anything. It's just kind of been self-experimentation, trying to figure out like what feels right and how my body feels the most calm and balanced. I love being able to live in my body in a healthy way. That's super important to me. It might not add years to our life. Our life is going to be whatever it is, but the quality of life is what I'm looking for.
How did you come into your trans identity?
Man, I'm thinking such a journey, you know. So I knew from the time I was three. At 3 years old, you know, two, three, it's like our sense of gender identity starts to form. So in my mind, I was a boy. That was just who I was. I remember, like, as a teenager, eighth grade or so, I was at that point, I think, at puberty where it's like, oh, this, you know, like the reality that my body was not just going to suddenly and magically be, you know, in line with a cis boy's body. You know, that reality started to set in, and I was allowed to, when I was a kid, you know, when I was like 5, 10, you know, to wear pants, to keep my hair short. Keeping my hair short felt like happiness to me. So that awareness of being different was there from a very young age. It's just that it didn't hit me or scare me until puberty. And then at that point, like from like seventh or eighth grade through high school, there was this feeling that I had to conform, that I had to just shove this down. I have to work through it. I have to come out on the other side feeling like my older sister, who is cis, who, you know, had crushes on boys and liked wearing dresses and makeup and curling her hair and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, you've got a few years. You've got to learn to like all of these things. That felt very unnatural to me. I remember going to bed every night praying. And I grew up spiritual, you know, strong spiritual foundation. Not exactly Hindu spiritually or religiously, but like you could say, you know, it's an Eastern philosophy out of Punjab, which is the northern part of India. So I grew up with a strong sense of faith. And I remember praying every night in the morning when I wake up, I want my body to be different. I want my body to be like a boy's body. Every morning waking up and just wanting to cry. It was heartbreaking. It's not just about the body. It's about like looking at your life and your future and trying to understand what options you have and what possibilities you have. You know, at 15, 16, 17, you know, watching my sister and my friends and, you know, people thinking about college and what they wanted to be when they grew up. I actually did want to be an actor at, you know, at that age. I remember thinking, how are you going to be an actor? And, you know, for some reason, soap operas were always on at my family's house. So I'd be watching Young and the Restless and all this. I was like, you're going to have to play that role. If you're an actor, you're going to be the girl's role. And that felt like it's just not something that I wanted. It's not something I connected to, you know, And so the sense of possibility of what my life would be, I saw nothingness. I had no idea what it would be. And my older sister, you know, wanted to get in the medical profession and very smart and very academic. And I wasn't super academic, you know, A's and B's, you know, which is great. She was a straight A student. She was very much like knew what she wanted. And I was like, I don't know what this is going to look like. But I liked creativity. Coming from a big family as I did, it was always someone's birthday. It was always an anniversary or something, or someone was getting married. And so I was the one who was tasked with, you know, organizing the entertainment program. You know, my cousins and I, we would do dances, and my role was to write the skit, the little play. So if it was someone getting married, it would be the story of when so-and-so met so-and-so, you know, and I would organize that, write it, and kind of make it funny. And I would always play the groom, because at a wedding, you know, I'd be usually dressed up in like an Indian dress or, you know, outfit or sari. And if I wrote a skit in which I got to play the groom or the boy, then I could change out of that outfit and I could wear the suit or the jeans or the whatever, you know, and no one would ever question it because it's just, quote unquote, she's just playing. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was therapy. It was escapism. It was a way to actually feel connected to myself, to actually enjoy the event. So that's, you know, just a glimpse into what that looked like, you know, in teenage years.
Yeah. I mean, you were like rewriting your life in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was definitely trying to figure out how to make it work. I wanted to live. I didn't know what my possibilities or options were, but I wanted to live. I liked being alive. I liked having fun and dancing and celebrating and not thinking so much about my gender identity. I wanted to just feel free and light. Freshman year of college, I grew up in North Carolina. I went to NC State for my first year of college. My older sister was there. It was about an hour's drive from where my family's house was. And I thought, okay, look, if everyone expects you to change, to be more feminine, it's really going to be hard for you to do that when everyone's around. I didn't want people commenting. I didn't want my family commenting about, you know, anything, like any change that I was going through. So I was like, I'm going to convince my family that I need to go away for school if they want me to be more how they want me to be. So I transferred out. I moved to Virginia. So I didn't get super far. I went to this really small school called Old Dominion University, which is medium size. I don't know what it was about Old Dominion. I just, when I went for a campus tour, I liked it. And I knew like that instinct was there. Okay, you're going to be here for the next few years. Something inside was telling me that. So I moved away. I went to Old Dominion. The international student population was pretty big at the school. So my friend circle was people from all over the world. People from Denmark and Malaysia and Germany. And so like, it was a really beautiful multicultural experience. It was other possibility. It was like looking at, getting a chance to look at life from this experience of peers and friends who had come from overseas to get an education here. And they were dreamers, you know, they were just like, they saw life in a different way. And even though we didn't talk about gender and sexuality, we talked about big things, you know what I mean? Like things that are bigger than that. And so there was a lightness there, you know, and I realized even going through that experience, I was actually over those few years that I was away, I was getting closer to feeling free in who I was, as opposed to feeling like I had to conform because you're going to have to go back, right? After college, I'm like, I have to go back home. But instead of feeling like I'm going to go back home and I'm going to be the girl they want me to be, I was actually becoming more just connected to something that felt like more joyful. So yeah, I think I was starting to date by senior year of college. I was starting to allow myself to date. And, you know, I had my first girlfriend at the time and didn't say anything to anybody. And anyway, sure enough, like after college, I ended up moving back home. I went back to North Carolina. I was there for about a year and a half. And I quickly realized you need to be somewhere else if you're going to continue to expand as a human being. I loved my family, but I couldn't see possibility for myself there, either creatively or whoever I was, which I still didn't have the word for trans yet. Mm-hmm. I minored in film studies when I was at Old Dominion. I majored in marketing and I minored in film studies. And I was starting to get into filmmaking. And I thought, this is really cool because stories are a way for people to see another person's experience, even if it's not their own, and connect to it. I really like that. As part of the film studies minor, I got a chance to make a film. I think we did a lot of like more theoretical work, but then we also had to make a film as a part of the degree requirements. A lot of people who came to that first screening, the movie was about growing up first generation Indian American here. And I interviewed myself and two of my friends, how we connected to our culture, how would we connect with our families, and how we related to being Americans. When that first screening happened, I think there weren't too many Indian Americans there. You know, it was a very, I guess, non-Asian crowd, you know, and I was like, oh, are people going to get this? Are people going to connect to it? And there were a lot of people that came up afterwards that felt like they connected to it because it was about growing up. It was about figuring out who you are, different from maybe your parents, and how you kind of come into your own. And so that's a universal message. And I understood that, you know, with storytelling, with film, you can focus on the universal that everyone can connect to. That's what I did. I moved out to California. I went to film school out here and I got into filmmaking. I also knew getting out of North Carolina was going to give me possibility from a personal perspective, even though I didn't know quite yet what that would look like. So I moved out here for film school. I went to Chapman. And I learned kind of filmmaking from everything behind the camera and kind of forgot that I wanted to act, to be honest with you. I forgot about it. I was like, well, filmmaking felt really fun and creatively energizing. And so that's what I did through school. And then for a number of years, I was focusing on everything behind the scenes as an indie filmmaker and learning. And then I met someone through a South Asian arts organization who was a trans guy. And he had not medically transitioned yet. It blew my mind. And I didn't know what the word transgender was. I had watched The L Word. I had seen the Max story. I didn't connect with the Max story, the story that they wrote on screen, even though there's a part of me that connected with Max.
Yeah, same. Watching it, I was just like, this is painful.
Yeah.
Like, poor Max.
Poor Max. And when you see something like that, and you're like, that is painful and kind of humiliating. For the way that they, you know, that story was written, it felt like, whoa, that's not what I want.
Max was a character on the original L Word show, which was a group of mostly lesbian friends in LA, talking, laughing, loving, breathing, fighting. Well, fans know how the rest of that goes. We watched Max transition, which got really messy, and not in a real human kind of messy. Like, the medical pieces were exaggerated, and he became a transphobic trope, a stereotype based in mostly lies. I applaud the fact that L Word tried to give the trans community representation, and I've long wondered if it would have been better to not try at all. He came back on Generation Q, and the actor who played Max was quoted in December of 2022 as saying it was healing to return to the show as a happy trans elder. I'll have more linked under the resources if you want to read up on it. Yeah. Honestly, I think the kindest thing would have been to have not written that character at all.
Yeah. I think you're right. Or.
But it also did help some of us like learn more about who we are. It's just also there was a cost there with that. Because again, poor Max is all I'll say.
Well, that's the thing. And then today, what I'm really grateful for is today you can't get I think people do things like that. Nowadays, we do see things like that sometimes in entertainment. But I think we're moving further away from it. Like the representation and the authenticity of who's writing the stories has become a huge part of the conversation that folks are getting more and more aware of.
Yes.
So I'm really grateful for that. Anyway, I had met my first like South Asian friend who was also a trans man. And I think I was like, dude, I gotta talk to you. I have to talk to you. And I remember we got to be friends and we, you know, sat down and we talked and it blew my mind because I did not know that you could say out loud to people that I feel like a different gender or gender identity and that people could actually respect you and respect what you're saying and respect your pronouns. And I just didn't know that was a thing. And so I think as I thought about him and his journey And then I actually, I think sometime after that, I looked up the definition of what transgender means on Wikipedia. And I was like, oh, so the reason you can't say you're a lesbian, which I never identified as, I never used the word. I just always, you know, if I was coming out to someone, I always said, I like girls. I have feelings for girls. But I just, the word lesbian, just for whatever reason, didn't feel right. Mm. Well, not for whatever reason. It's because I was a trans man who had feelings for women. And so when that light bulb went off, it terrified me, because it meant if I decided to medically transition, I could not hide that the way I could hide who I was dating, or the way I could hide under this kind of tomboyish thing that I was doing. And not only could I not hide, but that would mean that my parents would have to talk about having a son, and my sisters would have to talk about having a brother, and, you know, and what that meant and what that looked like, you know, really did scare me. I sat with it for about a year to year and a half of like kind of doing my own research and really thinking it through and kind of understanding, you know, and then going to therapy and just understanding if this was the thing for me. And I thought, if you weren't afraid of all of those things, would you want to do it? And there was no doubt in my mind, 100%. The idea of like, could you do this and the people in your life who you love will still love you. They will still be there. People around you will love and accept you for who you are. It felt so liberating, and it felt so, so beautiful and exciting. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. And I thought, I'm living this life for me. I'm not living it for anybody else. Everyone's life is finite. How do you want to live it? And so I moved forward with medical transition, which was the right step for me. I know that's not the right step for everybody, mm-hmm. or accessible to everybody. Luckily, it's not that it was an easy journey. It was still a journey and a process to help my family understand what I was going through. But they are very loving and supportive. And I think it's a best case scenario. I will say that. I know that's not everyone's experience, but I was very lucky and feel very lucky to have that kind of support. That's a nutshell of how I came into my trans identity.
There's so much to say there. I mean, first off, you're such a wonderful storyteller. So thank you for that. One of the things that I latched onto was that you just told people that you like girls. I really loved that was part of your journey, if only because we're at a place right now where there's so many labels, it's overwhelming. I've recently been connecting with people who are just newer to the LGBTQ+ community broadly. Mm-hmm. And I think they feel stuck. Well, I know they feel stuck because we talk about it. There's just all this emphasis on finding the right label and knowing the language. And I think it's way different entering the community now versus like, I think when like you and I did, you know, even though our stories are a little bit different, there's also a lot of similarities there. I love that you could just say that and people just got it. You just didn't need to have a label for it. I know that didn't fully explain your experience, because then, you know, you'd come to discover more about yourself. But I love that that was something you were able to do, because it can be that simple for folks.
Yeah, it did feel like simpler times. You know, I mean, labels, it's so interesting that you say that, because I feel like at every point, you know, language keeps changing and shifting, and sometimes finding the label is the thing.
Yes.
And it was important for me to know that there was a word for how I was feeling. And also, I don't know, I think sometimes the way that people perceive, people from outside the community perceive labels and our different identities can feel like they're separating us. I think there's still a way that as a society, we're still young, you know, we're still learning how to connect with each other beyond labels. I think there's an importance to labels, but I think there's something now that we're about going beyond trans. Isn't that what trans means? Going beyond, right? Going beyond the label in order to connect with each other as people. That's why storytelling feels so important to me, because it is about overarching human themes that everybody is going through, whether you're cis or trans or, you know, whatever a person's identity is, there are things that we go through as people that connect us that I think we've kind of moved farther and farther away from, that I'm excited to, I'm excited for moving through this phase and hopefully getting on the other side, which we desperately need to do at this point.
Yeah. So that's why, like, in hearing your story, some of what I took away was just how empowering it was for you to hear about the term trans, but it also seemed like, to an extent, there was some comfort around just saying, I like girls. So, I mean, yeah, sometimes language is really important for us to be able to find community. Cause, like, yeah, meeting that person, it sounds like that was really powerful for you. And
huge.
Like, for me, I was like the first person in my friend group. And so people were watching me and would later come out. My version of that was reading Stone Butch Blues and coming across Leslie Feinberg's work. And so I feel like everyone, I feel like one of the best ways to enter the community is to have that person that you're just like, ah, that's my experience, or, oh, things are starting to click for me. And yeah, getting to a place of wanting to like sit there and pick their brain and ask them all the questions. Cause it's like, I feel like everything's finally clicking for me and I'm connecting all these different dots. So I'm just glad you were able to have that.
Well, yeah. And I think about too, from your positioning, how to access resources to be able to help us along the way of through our journey. For a lot of people, they're that option of having like an actual physical friend group or community of people that get it isn't always there. So even for me, like I had this person, you know, and we were friends, we weren't around each other all the time or anything like that. But like even watching YouTube videos and blogs and Tumblr was a thing, you
it
know,
still
and,
is.
And even going to the library, is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm the worst with like what, yeah.
Says the marketing person. Media, I'm just teasing.
No, you're right. That's the one thing that I tell like even my reps, my managers, is like, I have a marketing background, and yet figuring out like marketing for yourself as an actor is such a challenge, I tell you, for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Thinking about our trans elders and also understanding we're trans elders too, which is weird because age and all that, it's come up before on the podcast, but you actually direct a play called Tales of the Transcestors. And I really love that as a term. So y'all are doing another run this year. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us more about it and why it's actually very timely.
Yeah, maybe a little over a year ago, I got a chance to collaborate with this wonderful theater company called Celebration Theater, based here in Southern California. They asked if I wanted to do some sort of show. And so we came across this kind of idea of bringing stories to life from trans people who had lived in the past. I like the idea of, you know, having it feel like a storybook vibe to it. And so the play was called Tales of the Transcestors, and we brought six stories to life from people who had existed throughout history, across time, across culture. We went as far back as the like mid to late 1800s to actually present day. And I just thought, we, even though this person hasn't passed, they are an elder in the community, and her story isn't going to be necessarily captured in a history book. And it's still a beautiful story and a valid story and an important story for people to know about. We brought that person's story, and her name is Claudia Hermosa. So Tales of the Transcestors, you know, became this fringe show. Fringe is kind of, you know, it's not a trans-centric audience per se. They're theater goers and they're actors and they're, you know, we weren't doing the show for a queer audience necessarily. And I loved that aspect, that people who were going to come had a sense of what they were stepping into, but were getting this kind of exposure for the first time. Transness is right now, like we talk about gender identity in a way where I think for some people feels like a new thing, but this trans people have been here since the beginning of time throughout every culture. I felt like that was not only kind of a gift to give the audience, to have some perspective, but also for our own community, because how often do we have access to these stories or get a chance to see them, you know, especially in this setting, like let alone read about them in a book, find a link online or whatever, but like getting a chance to kind of like sit in a theater and have these stories like come to life right in front of us was such a beautiful experience. So I think that we had Lou Sullivan. When was Lou Sullivan born? I think in the 40s and 50s. Through the early 90s, you know, who was an AIDS rights activist and a trans man, and Don Langley Simmons, who was a writer wrote all these like biographies and was a trans woman who lived in South Carolina and actually was just fine until she was also apparently the first interracial marriage in South Carolina at that time. And so faced a lot of backlash from people, you know, after she married a black man. And, you know, so we get into these stories of, you know, these people who we would just never know about. And so what happened was we did that last summer and we're getting a chance to now Celebration Theater has a partnership with a wonderful theater company called Greenway Arts Alliance. And we're going to be doing it again this summer, not through Fringe Festival, but just like its own thing in the summertime.
Well, it's so rad. And it's just like really comforting to know there's been other folks, because so many, I imagine, we don't know of because our history gets erased or they've had to hide who they are. Sometimes we don't find out about who they were until after they're long gone. And I have mixed feelings about that, and I'll save that for another day. But mm-hmm. I'm curious, especially thinking about the term transcestors, but I've been thinking about if they'd actually be proud of us. Because I think before it was really easy to believe that where we're at medically, community-wise, language, etc. But yeah, do you think where we are now is beyond our transcestors' wildest dreams? Or yeah, how do you feel about that? Because I'm not sure.
There was a time in certain cultures where trans people were really ingrained as a part of society, were revered as a part of society, seen as wisdom keepers. Mm-hmm. And I think the disappointment would be with society.
Yeah.
We've lost the ability to see magic in diversity. And I think there's such a fear out there right now that continues to dampen that magic. There's a beauty to having different experiences across humanity that I think we could actually be learning a lot from. Because there's so much divisiveness, I think for folks that feel like they're different, I think the majority is diversity. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a fear right now that's not helping us grow as humanity should be. I hope with the storytelling of modern times that we can bring it back, because it's the stories that I think are really going to reach across, say, the aisles, so to speak, and kind of help people understand what this experience is.
Well, you've shared that your career has taken some really interesting twists and turns. We've heard some of that. And as a creative, how do you keep from putting yourself in a box or just limiting what you're able to do?
That's a relatively new journey for me, like to give myself permission to have all these, when we're talking about labels, but to yeah. like have all these like labels, because like I started out in film production. So I learned kind of everything behind the camera, like whether it was art direction or being a sound, you know, boom operator or, you know, a gaffer grip. Like I learned all of that stuff behind the scenes first. And then as I began to present male, I started acting. I've been in the acting lane for a little under 10 years now. It coincides with my medical transition journey. I just went back to, I've been writing this story for about 5 or 6 years now about a secret agent who fights environmental crime. And last year we shot it. So it is just, by the time you air this, it will have had its first world premiere. So what happened was I wrote it, co-produced it, and acted in it. And I think over this last year, getting a chance to go through that navigating, you know, managing our post-production workflow and, you know, also going on auditions as an actor, I think it's just finally clicked for me. You don't have to necessarily put yourself in one of these boxes. You just have to kind of know that you have skills in all of these areas and kind of learn how to organize your life in a way that's going to allow you that freedom as a creative. So yeah, that's been just like really in this last year, what's felt like a really empowering journey. And it's made me excited about producing projects again. It's made me excited about like kind of tapping into, you know, my directing roots again, which I'm for on-screen stuff I haven't directed now in a few years. So yeah, it's been a really beautiful creative process, and I'm still learning and growing, and I still want to continue to get better. I think training is important and looking at other people who are like learning from other people that are doing the work is also really important to me. My good friend Jet Garrison directed Agents of Change. And, you know, getting a chance to work with him and kind of see his process and also know everyone is learning, you know, everyone is growing as creatives and as artists. And we have to, especially as queer and trans creatives, knowing that we don't always get the same opportunities as cis folks, especially cis men, giving ourselves room to grow as artists. And I really do appreciate that I got a chance to learn that in this last year.
I think that's really cool. And I think it just speaks to like the power of not putting yourself in a box, because I got to see Agents of Change.
You got a sneak peek. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And I have to say, I love it. And part of why, when I was part of the lesbian community, I really, really enjoyed a film called Debs. And it had started as a short.
Yes.
And then it turned into a feature film. And I actually recently made a friend watch it with me because I was just like, listen, I just love this movie. I don't know why. It's very campy. But I was wondering if that was any inspiration for Agents of Change, because you've got these secret agents. They're trying to fight the bad guys and everything. And there's similar, yeah, just like campiness and even your graphics, but like everything was amazing. Like I loved, you know, the opening. I loved like the first song that comes in. You've cast like really great folks. I guess basically I'm saying I'm obsessed with it.
I think I got really lucky, because when you talk about the cast, in the early versions of the script, I didn't know Rain Valdez. I'd never worked with her. I didn't know Gretchen Wilder, never worked with her. I didn't know Dalila Ali Raja. I didn't know Michael D. Cohen, you know, never worked with them. And so I think part of the reason why it was taking me so long, I feel, to write it is because I didn't know these people. And so I couldn't shape the characters, and it was hard to like find the story. But the other reason was that it's about the environment and, you know, climate justice. And that felt like a huge responsibility to write about.
Yeah.
I could watch the secret agent films. I could watch, you know, Mitch Delmonico, who I started this journey with of like the writing and the creating. You know, we would get together and watch the old Bond films, and we would just kind of tap into kind of like, okay, what did they do story-wise, and what are things that we liked and didn't like, you know, especially from a masculinity perspective of his interactions with women were like the Bond girls and the Sen, things that we were like, you know, we're moving into a different era of what masculinity looks like. But for him and I, that's what the example was consistently in a spy genre film.
Yep.
Okay, he was the hero. He always knew. He was always cool. He always got the girl. He could always say kind of the almost the sleaziest things or whatever and like get the girl.
Well, when we saw that in Debs too, I'm not trying to give away any of the movie if folks are going to end up watching it, which please do. I don't know why it brings me so much joy. Like, I literally squeal during it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, we see toxic masculinity in Debs, too, because this one guy gets very possessive over one of the women in the movie. So it was really gross.
Debs was an inspiration also for me in the sense of I was looking for other, I think after the Bond stuff, I was looking for other, well, are there any queer stories? Are there any, you know, and I found the short. I never got a chance to see the feature. I didn't, you know, maybe it's somewhere that I can easily watch now. But when I was doing the research, I was like,
yes,
when you don't have very many examples of how to do it differently, I think there can be a tendency to default into, oh, this is how it is. Mm-hmm. This is how the hero is going to be, because this is what works. And we wanted to do something that wasn't that.
Yeah.
With our main secret agent guy. His name is Guy, who I get to play. And so there was that bit of kind of looking at the spy films, like the Bond films, the Mission Impossibles, and even Debs, you know, looking at that and saying, okay, what can we do that's going to be a little bit different? Now, I'll say that from like a storytelling perspective, I looked at as many spy genre films and shows as I could. From a professional perspective, you know, the work that Rain Valdez does, the work that Gretchen Wilder does, you know, those actually, because they're indie, they are creatives, queer creatives who wrote their own pieces, vehicles for themselves as actors, because they weren't seeing the projects that they wanted to see for themselves. And so they just took it in their own hands and they're like, we're going to create it. And so I have a filmmaking background. I want to feel inspired by that. And I think I've felt very lucky that I've gotten a chance to meet these wonderful storytellers and creatives that are constantly leveling up and inspiring not just me, but I know there's a lot of like queer creatives that also look at them as like role models in a sense. Getting a chance to, as I was writing, I was like, why am I not writing Rain Valdez into this story to play my co-secret agent? The character was there. There was already a character of the co-secret agent. But as soon as I locked her in my mind to play that character, she came alive. So that's, I think, it's super exciting to me to get a chance to do something that I feel really, really proud of.
I have to say, I'm so fucking proud of you. I'm just going to throw the F-bomb in there because, like, seriously, it is so well done. Like, the lighting, the people you cast, you yourself in it, just seeing different, like, queer and trans representation like that. It's just so well done. I'm so excited for people to see it. And when it ended, I was like, no. Like, I want to see more of this story. I want to see more of, like, Guy's background. I got really invested. I'm so excited for you, and I'm really excited for people to see it. And you just did a screening, like a small screening, I think, for folks. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I did a private, I'm going to call it a producer screening. And it was in my mind, just invite 15 to 30 folks. And I want to get a first look. But I think like over the last year, I've gotten to meet more folks that are involved in the climate movement. And I wanted to invite those storytellers in to come see, like, how do you feel about this narrative? Like, I always wanted to make impact with the film, not just tell a cool spy genre thing, but like allow people to feel empowered in their ability to make a difference, especially when it comes to something that feels so huge as the climate movement.
Well, that's why I'm so grateful you shared about your college experiences, because now I know like this is something that's been like brewing in you for a while because you said that you weren't shy with those friends about talking about big things that were happening in the world.
Yeah, 100%. You know, thanks for making the link, because I think it was always there, thinking about things that are bigger. Agents of Change is not about identity in terms of queer and trans identity, even though our cast is almost a fully queer and trans cast. Mm-hmm. But we don't really talk about identity because there is something bigger going on that they are tapped into. You know, probably in a bigger version in the TV show or in the film or however this turns out in the long run. Of course identity is going to come into it. Of course. It's just in the span of a 15-minute short, there was no kind of natural fit that I could find. And that was okay because I feel like I'm someone also more than this identity. We go beyond that. And I think sometimes when like this, the culture that we're in right now, when people latch into, when like cis folks, especially like more kind of folks that aren't as exposed, latch onto transgender or gender nonconforming, they get really scared. Part of the thing for me is there's also more than that, that you would probably connect to if you put your guard down just a bit. And so I wanted to explore this film from that lens of connecting on something that's also beyond gender identity. The climate movement is something that I think it's going to impact communities of color first. It's going to impact like folks that are disenfranchised first.
It already is.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wanted to center like queer and trans people of color at the forefront of that movement that are making a difference. So some people may look at it and they say, oh, it's not a queer film. But I'm like, no, it is a queer film. It's going to impact our communities first. So I do see it as a queer film. And also all of us are out queer and trans actors. If anyone chooses to Google us, then they'll know.
Just having that casual representation is nice, and not making it about your transness, not making it about your queerness. And so if anything, yeah. I love it for that alone. Like I said, I'm just so proud of you. It's so great. And clearly, you've worked with like super ridiculously talented people on it. It really shows.
Thank you. I think one of the things that I do think about too is, you know, there's a conversation of representation in the entertainment industry. And what I want is for queer and trans folks and Black folks and South Asian folks and, you know, folks of all identities to get a chance to come into writers' rooms and positions to direct projects that aren't just about those identities, in the same way that cis white men have always had, just kind of, it hasn't even been a question. oh, this is a story about a cis white man. Why don't I get a cis white man to direct it?
Yeah.
It hasn't been a thing. It's just, oh, this is a film about blah, blah, blah. I'm going to get this person to direct it, not because it's about identity, but because they're an awesome director.
Yeah.
You know, or they're an awesome writer. And I think that's what I want to see us moving into.
Yeah. And no one's like tokenized because
exactly
you wrote it.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. So it really just felt natural and amazing. I think that's why I've like been gravitating toward it so much.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so, so welcome. It's just funny to think about, we met in that library a million years ago, it feels like. And then like just looking at where we're at now, it's just really cool to see you doing your thing.
Well, I'm inspired by your, you know, going on the journey of hosting the podcast, because I know too, as a creative, that's a lot of work. Like setting up the interviews and figuring out who the guests are going to be. And then, you know, the recording and editing, it's a lot of work. And I really hope you, it sounds like you found a lot of fulfillment in this creative process too.
Yes, thank you. I think that's what's been helpful to keep the work, it being sustainable, because sometimes it can just feel like really treacherous, especially thinking about everything we're going through right now on a larger scale. And yeah, so to have some sort of creative outlet's nice, but then you get like a taste for it. And now I'm like, there's already like three other podcast ideas I have. And I'm like, no, I don't have time for those right now. That's going to have to come later. But what's one allyship tip you'd like everyone listening to consider?
So two come to mind, actually two allyship tips. One is kind of personal. It like an individual thing. And then the other is, you know, kind of like one is like an inward thing and the other one's an outward thing. So I think number one, work through your own trauma. If we want to be able to show up for other people, then we have to heal. We have to be able to come through our difficult points, you know, the things that have been hard for us to find strength on the other side. I think everybody has wounds and that healing looks different for everybody, whether it's therapy or journaling or working out, you know, or all of the above or something else. Do what you need to do to be your strongest self emotionally and mentally so that you can show up for others. Two is try to find connection points with folks. I don't know how I want to phrase this, to be honest with you. I'm not saying like go out of your way to talk to people that are really uncomfortable for you. I'm just saying when we're in conversation with folks that we feel are different from us, let's try and find connection points. And I think I'm saying that to cis folks. I'm actually saying that to cis folks who are trying to understand the trans community. I try to challenge myself to do that back. And it's not easy, but I will say it's maybe worth the effort.
Of course you found a way to sneak two in. Gosh.
I don't like rules. I'm a middle child, remember?
I know us like queer and trans folks, we love like a good explanation for things like, well, I'm a Virgo and my whatever moon rising. And yeah, we're always finding excuses for shit. Like, I feel so seen. Yes, I'm the middle child.
I didn't even talk about my signs. Oh, my God.
Oh, no. We can shove those in somewhere.
Or the next one. We'll talk about it next time.
Sean, thank you for your incredibly kind words. I will work on taking compliments better in the future. It makes my heart happy to know that you're a possibility model for others on so many levels. I am thrilled to continue to watch your career and see what you do. I am wishing you all of the great success with Agents of Change, and folks, I hope you stay on the lookout to see if it comes to a festival near you. You can follow updates at Agents of Change Movie on Instagram. I also want to briefly take a moment to just thank everyone who attended the slew of events I held at the end of March. I got such great feedback from folks, and I'm humbled. My co-hosts for two of the events were also brilliant. Thank you, Travers and Rebecca, for being the superstars you both are. Rebecca and I also had such a great turnout and so much interest in our Trans Allyship event that we'll be hosting another one May 18th. Save the date and stay tuned for more details. And now the final three self-reflection questions. Number four, What kinds of options and possibilities did I see for myself as a child? Number 5. Is there something I want to wear, but I think I can't for some reason? Why? Number 6. Do I have an experience that I don't have a word or label for, but I wish I did? What would that do for me? Visit allyshipisaverb.com for any resources and a full transcript of the episode. And remember, sometimes allyship means working through your own trauma.